So thanks everybody so much for joining the episode number one of the SOAP podcast, Spotlight on Advocacy Podcast and Policy. The goal is to provide an informative background regarding health policy to the radiation oncology community. My name is Anna Brown, and I'm a radiation oncologist in community practice in Wisconsin and one of the co-hosts of the podcast. I'll pass it over to my other co-host now and help introduce our special guest.
Hi, good afternoon or evening or morning, whenever you're going to listen to this. We're really excited to be able to share with you a little bit about what we're doing in ACRO regarding advocacy and hope to educate you all around this topic of health policy. My name is Tarita Thomas. I'm the chair of the Government Relations and Economics Committee and really happy to be here with both Dr. Brown and with Jason McKittrick. Jason, if you'd like to just introduce yourself and your role with us, as well as what you do for our greater community.
Happy to. So Jason McKittrick, I'm a principal at Liberty Partners Group. I'm a former committee staffer on the Hill, and I've been government relations and economics committee staff for ACRO for at least a decade, and happy to be on the podcast tonight.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us tonight. So just to get things started, Jason, could you tell us a little bit more about which committees in the Senate and House are responsible for development of healthcare legislation?
For sure. So there are really three main committees when it comes to and what they're called authorizing committees when it comes to Medicare and Medicaid legislation. And those are the House Ways and Means Committee, House Energy and Commerce Committee, and the Senate Finance Committee. All of those have jurisdiction. The jurisdiction between Ways and Means, Energy and Commerce is a kind of a shared jurisdiction. So, you know, sometimes there are a little bit of turf battles there, but on Medicare, the jurisdiction come for Ways and Means comes out of the tax jurisdiction. So Medicare Part A tax gives them jurisdiction over Medicare. Energy and Commerce, the jurisdiction over general revenue healthcare gives them jurisdiction over Medicare on Part B. So that's how it's shared. In the House, Medicaid is really more of a Energy and Commerce Committee jurisdiction. And then Senate Finance Committee has both of those. Other committees in the Congress will deal with sort of private health insurance issues as well. And then you've got committees that do what's called discretionary spending. Those are the appropriations committees. We care less about that as it relates to radiation oncology. Those tend to fund programs that are still very important, you know, NIH and FDA and those kinds of things go through the appropriations committee jurisdiction, but as it relates to you know, reimbursement for radiation oncology and other services within, say, the physician fee schedule or the hospital outpatient PPS, that's again primarily Senate Finance Committee, Ways and Means, and Energy and Commerce.
So Jason, when you look at, you know, these different committees that you've just highlighted for us, and thanks for, you know, doing that, if we're trying to think about strategically in terms of healthcare, it sounds like there are different committees deal with different parts of the healthcare dollars. Which of those committees would be most relevant potentially to radiation oncologists or oncologists in general?
Again, I think those three, Senate Finance Committee, House Ways and Means, House Energy and Commerce, are typically the three committees that that we care about.
Great. Thanks so much for that overview. And what would you say in terms of advocacy efforts is the most effective way to approach members of Congress with, you know, as related to health policy?
There are lots of ways to approach it. Of course, you've got a whole other corner of the city in DC that deals with, the regulatory side as well. But when you're talking about bills, when you're talking about, changing the law, you've got different casts of characters that you need to be working with. You've got at a high level, you've got the members of Congress, and then you've got the staff. And within the staff, you've got different kinds of staff. You've got committee staff, and then you've got personal office staff. You also have leadership staff. And those those distinctions also apply somewhat to the members of Congress. You've got folks that are in the leadership, the speaker and the leader in the House, and the majority leader and minority leader in the Senate are leadership roles. On the committees, you've got the chairs of committees, but then you've got folks that are on health subcommittees within Senate Finance, Ways and Means, Energy and Commerce. Those are different, all different kinds of actors in this drama, all have somewhat different roles. So if you want to get a bill introduced, for instance, you're probably typically going to try to work with a member on one of the committees. Typically not a chairman, sometimes a chairman if it's one of their really, top priorities, but more often than not, it's one of the rank and file folks. Often you want to try to get somebody on the health subcommittee since they have a particular interest in healthcare. But then you want to certainly want to be talking to the committee chairs about the subcommittee chairs as well as the committee chairs about your issues, and then certainly want to be educating leadership because they are the ones that, as the packages come together, they're the ones that really sort of say, okay, that's in, that's out. Committee's done most of the work, but they're the folks at the sort of the, at the end of the line that determine what goes in and out of a bill.
So, and then, in terms of advocacy, Jason, are there any particular members of the House or Congress that, have been strong champions of the oncology field or arena? And just more to Dr. Brown's point, in terms of advocating, to those particular members, is there any strategies or ways to consider doing that?
Yeah, I mean, there have been longstanding champions like Senator Stabenow, who we've been working with for years and years and years, who's been a champion going back, over a decade. Her counterpart for a number of years was Senator Burr. It's interesting now that we've got another senator, Senator Tillis, out of North Carolina, that also is a strong champion. On the House side, we've got folks like Congressman Bill Auracus, who has attended meetings, annual meetings that ACRO has had, a few of them last few years he's attended. You've got guys like Congressman Murphy, who's on the GOP Doctors Caucus, who's somebody we've been working with. Folks like Congressman Dunn, Neil Dunn, also are very on top of our issues. So we've got a mix in the House and the Senate, and on the Democratic as well as Republican side, that have had an interest in radiation oncology and have been great for us over the years. And I'm sure was there another part of your question there?
Oh, no, I think you touched up, you answered it. I mean, you mentioned something about the Doctors Caucus, and to be honest, I've tried to engage and saturate myself with all this information, but can you talk a little bit about the Doctors Caucus? Because I honestly, how do they, in terms of being legislative, folks as well as physicians, how have they kind of impacted this space from your perspective, working on the Hill for as long as you have?
Sure. They have a very, unique role within the Congress. They're not a committee, they're a caucus, but they sort of take a leadership role when it comes to issues that impact physicians. And so, this most recent, battle to get some relief on the conversion factor cuts and the physician fee schedule, Congressman Murphy, who again is one of the chairs of the Doctors Caucus, has been a leader, and they really kind of serve as an interface between advocates, physician advocates, and the committees and the leadership. Many of the folks on the Doctors Caucus are either members of Ways and Means or Energy and Commerce. Murphy is on Ways and Means. You got guys like Barrasso are on the Senate Finance Committee. So many of them are already on authorizing committees, but they play a kind of a different role when they kind of come together as the voice of physicians within the Congress. So they're an important group as well to be working with.
So Jason, you had mentioned, over many years, kind of working with certain members of Congress, and wanted to get your perspective on how important personal relationships are in terms of working with both members of Congress and their staff.
Incredibly important, and I think that's for anybody listening to this podcast right now, it is really, really important if you want to be involved in advocacy to get to know your member of Congress, particularly if they are, again, sitting on one of those committees that we've been talking about, Senate Finance Committee, Energy and Commerce, Ways and Means. Develop a relationship with them. We can help you with that. There are a number of ways to do that. Some of them are just to be, local, be in the neighborhood, go to an event that is being hosted for the member. If you really want to get involved, certainly, hosting a fundraiser yourself for a member is a great way to do that. And it's really important, I think, to be talking to that member on a regular basis over time, so that when something happens, when you need to talk to the member, that they know who you are, that there's a level of trust there and a level of understanding between you and the member. That's really, really important to do. And it's something where, as I say, I am, a lobbyist for the American College of Radiation Oncology, but I'm one person. And I'm a lobbyist, and it's an important role. But it's a different role than, Anna, you may have for as a constituent for, or treated you as well as a constituent in one of these member of Congress, House or Senate members, where they see you as somebody that can be helping them, get reelected, that can be a voice of support for them in the next election. So, again, anybody that's listening to this and you've got an interest, please, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to you about how to get more involved. The other way to do it, which is sort of the easiest way, is to just when we send out action alerts on a given bill, is to, send a letter into your member of Congress. Those are always helpful. Those are currency for me, because I can use those letters to reach out to staff and say, hey, staffer, you got 10 letters on this issue. And, let me help to explain that to you. So that's, that's also important. They're all important. And it just depends on how active you want to be, how much you want to be engaged.
Yeah, Jason, I think those are very helpful, comments. You know, I have been interested in this for some time, and I actually had the opportunity to go to meet with a representative from my district in someone's home. And that was really a very special experience, first to kind of share that space with them and to have conversations over some dinner and kind of talk about what our issues are, what they feel the issues are for our community. So I think, yeah, definitely engagement is just so important. And one thing I, you know, also just wanted to highlight, I think we've kind of talked about this. I mean, we're a small specialty in terms of radiation oncologists, and you know, we do have ways to advocate, and there are some of our bigger specialty sister organizations like the American Academy of Family Physicians. They also have ways to advocate, and because they're a larger group, maybe just because of the force of numbers, they end up having a little bit of a louder voice. But I think if each of us try to get engaged individually, we can always be more powerful that way. So yeah, I think those are really, really good points.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Excellent. So we've been talking a lot about like individual or organization level advocacy, but wanted to explore, and Jason, hopefully you can highlight this some more, the role of political action committees or PACs, and how important are those?
Sure. Well, PACs are very important. And so Tarita mentioned the AAFP. You know, they've got a PAC that last I looked was in the, you know, several hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, you know, what that allows them to do is to develop relationships with a number of members of Congress, and to kind of regularly build into the budget. Okay, you know, this is Congressman Smith is somebody that, you know, has been a great ally for us. We want to support him, and just know, and he knows, and you know that you're going to be coming to talk to him every year. And that's a really important thing to be doing. So a PAC is a something that is another way for folks to get involved if you want to make a contribution. And the contribution can literally be, you know, just the amount you spend on a coffee every morning is enough. If we all did that, if we all put in just a coffee's worth every morning into the PAC, based on our, even though our membership is, you know, smaller than some, we would have a very significant war chest to be, you know, furthering our issues on the Hill. So PACs are very important. That is one of two ways to be involved. The other way is to just make an individual contribution. So, you know, you've got AcroPAC, it's got an amount of money in it. There are FEC rules that say that you know, through the PAC, you can only give so much money. So, and often what happens is, you know, these events will be sort of a combination of PAC as well as individual money. So, you know, if the three of us were going to do a fundraiser, you know, that included AcroPAC, we might put, you know, some amount from AcroPAC in, and then, you know, the three of us might also do $500 or $1,000 each as well. So both are important. They're important in different ways again as well. It's good for a member of Congress to be seeing that, okay, this event was, you know, an AcroPAC event, for them to start to link those things. Okay, you know, Anna or Tarita's, that's AcroPAC. Okay. But also if you're making individual contributions, you know, that's something that they, you know, that they register as well. Okay. You know, Anna's somebody that contributes to my, you know, elections on a regular basis. That's really important for them to sort of know you as somebody that supports them, not just in sort of a vote, but also financially.
Yeah, and just to add a tidbit, Jason, I did have the numbers for the Family Physicians PAC of 2022. Their election spend was about $660,000. So that sounds like a big amount. But I also wanted to highlight that, you know, it's not just physicians or physician groups that have PACs. I mean, every industry has PACs. And I think it's important to understand it's, we're just trying to get the opportunity to share some of our issues and concerns with people who make these decisions for us, who are elected, of course, to make these decisions for us and to give us a chance to have our voice heard too. So, you know, I think that's a something to just keep in mind.
Yep.
All right, so pivoting a little bit more in terms of kind of recommended tips for advocacy with your years of experience on the Hill, Jason, what would you say are some of your recommended strategies, such as kind of like focus, scope of asks, and kind of ways to engage with certain materials or visits with members of Congress and their staff?
I mean, if it's a staffer, you know, those are the folks that, you know, they're hired to be, policy wonks. They're hired to get in the weeds and really, really understand this stuff as we all know on this call here, for instance, the Medicare physician fee schedule can be very, very complicated. And so those staffers, typically you're going to want to go in with a slide deck and some other data to educate them on any given issue that radiation oncology cares about. Members of Congress, it's a little different. They tend not, they've got so many issues coming at them that, slide decks typically are not something that they want to see. You know, at most maybe you can bring a chart in or something like that, but usually it's a lot more conversational about the issue. Their staff, you know, typically will have been the ones to brief them. So they'll, you know, take a, you know, whatever 15 slide deck and kind of boil it down into a kind of a one page memo for the member and about why they care about, you know, should care about a given issue. The techniques are a little different given who you're speaking with. There are different forums to do that. You can, you know, meet with them personally in their office. You can call them, you can meet over Zoom. If it's a member of Congress, as we said, you can do an event with them at your home or at a restaurant. There's a number of different ways to interact. But again, I think, you know, at a high level, the staff wants to get the detail and the member kind of wants to get a higher level understanding of why it's important to their district or their state, and their larger set of policies that they want to be working on.
Excellent. Yeah, that definitely makes sense, tailoring kind of the level of detail of the content as well as the strategy, whether it's meeting with staff or with Congress members.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, again, kind of on the topic of strategy, what are your thoughts on the strategy of a coalition approach versus an individual organization approach for certain asks?
Yeah, coalitions are always stronger. So if you can be part of a coalition, that's always better. It's rare that an issue is just about one specialty, one organization. If it is, it's maybe something that's maybe you got some factory in somebody's district that's dealing with some whatever environmental thing that if that's the case, then it's just you and you're just going to be working with your local member of Congress. But particularly on our kinds of issues that many of our issues are sort of physician issues that are even broader than radiation oncology, but even for things that are very radiation oncology specific, you really want to, if to the extent you can, you want to be working with our you know, our sister organizations to kind of get aligned and be speaking with a larger voice, because they will ask. I mean, that's one of the very early questions you'll get from both staff or members of Congress. You know, okay, you've got this issue on radiation oncology. Does anybody oppose it? Anybody on the other side? And if there are, that's really tough to, you know, to sort of jump over that hurdle. So yeah, coalitions are extremely important.
Jason, in terms of coalitions, just so that, you know, we can understand a little bit more about from the radiation oncology perspective, can you name some of the coalitions that that you know, either our organization or others are part of?
Yeah, sure. I mean, some of them don't have a name. So, you know, the most recent statement we put out on radiation oncology payment reform, you know, that's not a formal coalition, but it is, you know, the major players in radiation oncology, and that's a really important thing to be telegraphing to the Hill. When you've got a, certainly when you've got a major issue you're working on, you want to be able to say, you know, it's not just ACRO, but it's ACRO and these other organizations that represent, you know, the majority of radiation oncology. Other coalitions that we're a part of, you know, the United Specialists for Patient Access and the Clinical Labor Coalition are two organizations that, you know, we've been working with on these, you know, cuts to office-based specialists. You know, over the years, there have been other organizations that we have worked with when we, years ago, when, you know, we were successful in getting the freeze on the radiation therapy codes back in 2015. There was a group called the Radiation Therapy Alliance that we worked with. So, you know, coalitions will kind of, you know, they'll kind of come and go, and they will sometimes, you know, if there's an issue that gets solved, they'll kind of just dissolve. And then if another issue pops up, then you make a new coalition. Coalitions more often than not are not, they're not incorporated entities or anything like that. They're unincorporated. They're just groups. And, you know, but it is the society, it's the college that kind of lives on, you know, on a much longer basis as we have, you know, to advocate on radiation oncology. But coalitions kind of come and go based on the issue.
That definitely makes sense, and that's a really helpful perspective to know of some of the coalitions that ACRO and radiation oncology generally have been part of. Mm-hmm. So excellent. So I think we're kind of getting close to our time here. Just wanted to see, Jason, if you have any kind of concluding remarks or takeaways from our discussion today about interacting with Congress for health policy.
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to underscore that, you know, our strength is, you know, while I can play a role and do play a role as a lobbyist, our strength is really in our membership and getting our membership, involved. And so I just urge anybody that's listening to this podcast to, I know, as busy as we all are, you know, to just maybe sit back and think for a few minutes, okay, who is my congressman? Maybe I don't even know who that is. You know, who's my senator? And just think about, you know, if you like what he or she is saying, then start to develop a relationship with that person. That is so important. It's so important. They want to know that what they're doing is of value to their constituents, and they want to know it based on a constituent that they know and trust. And but this stuff takes time. It's not a You know, it's not a thing where you just, you know, kind of, you don't know the guy at all. You do a fundraiser, you ask him to do something and he does it. That is not how this works. You know, these things are relationships that get built over months and years, where, you know, there's mutual support and understanding. And that's how the system works. And so really please take the time to, you know, get to know your member of Congress and try to develop that relationship over time. We've got folks right now within ACRO that have those kind of relationships, that have congressman, you know, fill in the blank cell number, and, you know, can call them and talk to them about issues of importance. And that's really what we need to grow over time. So.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jason. That's an excellent closing remark. Thank you, and Dr. Brown, for suggesting that. You know, I would also just make another echo of what Jason has said, and just add to it that it's actually a very rewarding thing to be engaged with government. I think, you know, not trying to get too philosophical here, but, you know, we are still a really great country. And, you know, I think all of us can have an impact, and every vote counts, and everybody's opinion should matter. And we should all have a way to voice our opinions in a productive, you know, thoughtful, you know, respectful way. So I think that it's important for us as radiation oncologists to also exercise that opportunity and right for us to talk about what we do in a different way with our colleagues in the legislative arena that make these decisions that impact literally a lot of what we do every day. So, you know, I'm so glad to have this time, Dr. Brown, and thanks for getting us on this podcast to talk about this important issue.
Agreed.
And thank you both so much for joining, and really looking forward to further discussions. Hope everyone has a great rest of the night.